May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
Good afternoon and welcome to Attention Please. KPTZ airs Attention Please each Monday at noon and at 5 and on Saturdays at noon to draw our attention to the good work being done towards a more informed and more resilient community. I'm Phil Andrus. In this edition of Attention Please, we're going to visit with the Jefferson County Historical Society. With me are Stephen Yates, who's curator of Juxtapositions, an exhibit currently up at the Museum of Art and History, and Tara McCauley, who is the director of education and public programs for the Society. And also, she is my co-conspirator, or one of them anyway, for the holiday extravaganza. Thank you both for joining me on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. When I view the homepage of the Historical Society, I read, quote, the new Jefferson County Museum of Art and History. But Tara, when I walk down Water Street, I see the same familiar buildings, the same bunch of red bricks that I've seen for the half century I've known this place. And I don't know what's new. What is to be new? What is the new museum? What is this all about?
Yeah, so we are launching a sort of a newly imagined, newly envisioned museum experience inside our 1892 Historic City Hall building. So the building itself, fear not, will not be changing, that beautiful historic gem of a building. But the visitor experience will be, and we're reimagining a lot of our exhibition spaces. We're reimagining the visitor experience, everything from sort of what might prompt you to start your visit with us, whether that's on our website or with a phone call, to sort of what your experience is coming into the museum, to what you'll see. And we're really, really excited about it. So we're at the beginning of the process. So there is nothing too terribly visible yet. We do have an exhibition about this project on display at the museum, but the big changes are yet to come.
And this sounds very expensive.
Well, it's not free, for sure. We are launching a capital campaign as well to help support this work. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more about the capital campaign as well in the year to come.
And the question I have then is why? It seems like this building inside and out has been charming for, what, a century perhaps. So why revamp the insides? I enjoy going into the museum as it is today.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. One thing is that history is always changing, right? History is dynamic, history is evolving, and we really want the opportunity to give our history exhibitions a refresh, to really, you know, think about what kinds of histories are not represented, think about what kind of stories are not represented in our history exhibition spaces, and create space for, you know, the diverse voices and the diverse experiences that have shaped this history. So that's one big reason. And another is that, you know, museum experiences should not be static, right? They are meant to be, to spark curiosity, to inspire. And as such, they need love and attention as time goes on. So it felt like the time was right. And so we're doing it.
So Tara, what proportion of your entire collection can one see at the moment in the museum? And do you intend to expand what you're able to show?
That is a great question. So we have, you know, we estimate we have about 500,000 objects in our collection, and that includes two-dimensional things. So all of the paper, all of the photographs, those things in our collection. And if I had to guess, I would guess there's more like hundreds of things on display at the museum. So whatever that percentage works out to be, hundreds versus 500,000 is the percentage of things that are on display at the museum currently. And we do hope to be able to show more things. Absolutely. You know, another thing I didn't even mention is around accessibility of the building itself and making sure that all of our visitors can experience all of our spaces, which is another big goal of this project. So
are there exhibits or other goings on for the Society and for the museum that I don't know about that you'd like to talk about before we talk with Stephen?
Well, we've got several exciting programs coming up. The one that comes to mind is the final event in our Fall First Friday Speaker Series program. So our First Friday Speaker Series program this fall has been all about fires and firefighting. And we chose that topic in part to help celebrate the 150-year anniversary of the East Jefferson Fire and Rescue. So we've done three programs so far, and our last one is on December 2nd, Friday, December 2nd. It's at 7 p.m., and it will feature Dr. Ernesto Alvarado, who is a professor at the University of Washington, and he will be talking all about fire ecology and indigenous fire practices. So we're really excited about it.
Did you say indigenous fire practices?
Yes, fire ecology, indigenous fire practices. That's his area of study.
Stephen Yates, I'm going to speak to you now. You are the curator of Juxtapositions, the work of Rachel, I'm going to pronounce her name, Pfefferman. And Correct. She lived from 1955 to 2010. Stephen himself is a painter, a ceramicist, a teacher, but he's the curator of this show. And we will talk about him more later in the show. But first off, let's talk about the exhibit. Juxtapositions, it will be up until the end of December, the end of the year. Rachel Pfefferman, who was she? Why is she important both as a person and as an artist?
Thank you. Rachel was an artist who moved here around 1986. She had training in other areas and grew up in the Bay Area. And when her sister, Julie, who is the keeper of her belongings now and her artworks, approached the museum, I said I would curate it because I'd known Rachel personally. I was one of the few people who knew her as an artist back then. I knew Rachel's work was unique. I had seen it when it had been exhibited once before here many years ago at the Ed Cain Gallery, and thought it should be seen by the museum public. And I chose the title of Juxtapositions because the work combines and contrasts ideas that seemingly don't go together, but they're connected. So she connects domestic memories from her beloved grandmother, Helen, with imagery about the evils of the Holocaust. And she kind of blends them together and makes them play off each other. So it felt like she had created a unique style where she was fusing realism in a narrative sense with abstract ideas. And the works are all traditional drawing materials, black and white on paper. They're quite large and they're quite powerful, most of them.
Is there text as well as images?
She didn't even title the work. She only numbered them. But she created a book and wrote very extensively, both from her own diary and from her dreams and memories about the imagery. So we have quite a bit of context for them. And on the identification labels, we tried to create a paragraph for each drawing or each couple of drawings to help explain them.
Where was she raised and when did she come to Port Townsend? And for that matter, why did she choose Port Townsend?
She was raised in the San Francisco Bay Area and did much of her studies there. She came here around 1986, so quite a few years ago, not too many years, probably 6 or 7 years after I got here. I'd known her work because we both exhibited in Seattle at galleries, and I became friends with her over the years just in passing at museum openings or gallery openings here in town. She picked this area because she loved the Northwest when she first ended up in Seattle and made trips over here. She just fell in love, like so many do, with Port Townsend, and she felt like it was a safe, nurturing community to be part of. So she made the move over here. I think she had kind of a broad experience in the arts, but she ended up focusing on a number of series, and this drawing series took up quite a few years of her life. It started when her grandmother was already elderly, and she said when she first started it that her grandmother was frail, and she thought she needed some way to sort of celebrate her life and to think about her life. She has two little quotes that I think are useful. She said she was interested in creating a portrait through objects. So most of the drawings feature an apron that her grandmother had made as a young woman. And it's in all sorts of variations from hanging loosely to being wadded up. And then in another quote, she said, within this structure, the black and white media on paper, I wanted to see how inventive I could be using the limited vocabulary. So she intended to keep this very narrow focus of both media and ideas. And most of these drawings that we have here show that.
And was she prominent in the arts community in the Port Townsend area, or for that matter, in the Seattle area, or beyond that, prominent elsewhere? Was she prominent internationally? Do people in other countries or other parts of the United States know who she was?
She showed for a number of years at Davidson Gallery in Seattle. She didn't have much of a presence here in Port Townsend because there weren't many galleries, but she did have an exhibit when she had completed a majority of the drawings in 1998 at Ed Kane Gallery. And it was very thrilling for her, and that's where I first saw the work and got to talk to her about it in person in that gallery. She had shown in other group exhibits in the East. I don't have the names of those exhibits on hand, but she had a reputation as being a serious artist, both in Seattle and in other areas.
To her grandmother. Her grandmother was in the Holocaust, but survived the Holocaust, is what I understand you to say. Where did she live at this time? And do you know anything more of her story, how she did survive, and where she lived when she eventually came to the USA?
Her grandparents on both sides were Polish and Russian Jews. They weren't involved directly in the Holocaust. They saw the signs and fled before the war began and ended up in the United States. The impact of the Holocaust always weighed very heavily on Rachel, and she connected her mother's and her grandmother's, life to the Holocaust because she could have easily have ended up there if she had stayed. That connection to her grandmother and the Holocaust is one of the juxtapositions. It's kind of this curiosity that she felt compelled to interweave imagery, that dead bodies from the Holocaust, with domestic imagery of apples and challah bread. It's just an interesting approach to things. I don't know many people who have taken that approach in their art.
It would seem like a good bit of it would be emotionally very taxing. Is there any levity in there as well?
No, I don't think there's any levity. It's all, some of it's just dramatic. Some of it is very emotionally charged. Some of it is very hard to look at. But the majority of it weaves it together so that you can tolerate it, I guess, and appreciate it. It's not anything that I would say you enjoy looking at particularly, although her technique is beautiful and it's fun to see how she will show hands sewing and modeled objects that are masterful. That part I enjoy. But the topics themselves, you know, that even though her grandmother got away from Poland in time, majority of the Holocaust victims ended up having a very tragic end. Her drawings, again, are this sort of odd mixture.
And you knew her personally. She was a friend of yours, I believe you said. Did you and she, when she was living, have conversations about the pieces that you now have in the exhibit?
Well, it's interesting because we were friends and we saw each other quite often. And she was building her house and studio and garden. And I was a big gardener at that point. And we met fairly often to talk about plants and how to organize her garden space and her studio. But she kept her drawings quite secretive. And so I knew she was doing them, but she didn't invite me to see them. And so when I finally saw them at the Ed Kane exhibit, they were quite stunning. I was astonished at what she'd accomplished.
But no conversations after that either?
Well, we talked about them over the years. She didn't live very long after that final exhibit. She developed breast cancer in 1999. The exhibit at Ed Kane's was the year before. She had intended to create 100 drawings and ended up creating only about 42, decided that she needed to work on the book and that the drawings were done. So she stopped drawing the year she received her cancer diagnosis and continued working on the book from then on until it was published in 2009.
How difficult was it for you artistically and emotionally to curate this exhibit? You knew her, but maybe that wouldn't be important so much as just having to confront these difficult pieces and put them on the wall in the museum.
In a way, it felt like a real good ending to the story, in a way, because she had spent so many years compelled to create this work and had only had it shown many years ago here and once down at Bainbridge Island Museum of Art. So to have it shown again in the community she loved, I thought was very important and beautiful in a way. So it's an honor, sort of a memorial to her, to create this exhibit. And the work itself is disturbing in a lot of ways, but I actually enjoyed assembling the exhibit and organizing things so that she would be happy with it as she saw it.
And have you conversed with anyone who's come to the museum, either didn't know what they were going to encounter in this exhibit or came specifically for it? What impact has it had upon the people who've seen it?
I think most people are surprised to find this combination of imagery. A lot of people have been emotional about it, especially when they read the text where she describes what was going on in her life or what compelled her to create a particular image. One of the things that she talked about was when Ed Cain offered her the exhibit, and she was so excited about it because the same day that he offered the exhibit, she had gotten a rejection letter for a proposal she'd made. So the typical life of an artist where one thing goes up and the other thing goes down was something most of us could identify with. So most people who see it, I think, are emotionally affected both by the imagery and by her descriptions of what allowed her to create it.
Tara McCauley, I want to ask you the impact this exhibit had upon you, if you're willing to talk about it.
Yeah, I agree with Stephen. It's being in this space and experiencing this exhibition is really holding a lot of complexities and truths and sort of emotional reactions in the same, kind of all in the same space. And I think to Stephen's point about technique, you know, I find Rachel's work to be very beautiful. There's such a depth in imagery. I find the longer I look at a piece, the more I notice, and the more I notice, and the more I notice. And then I'll think I've looked at a piece for, then I've seen it completely. And then I'll, you know, somebody else will point something else out that I didn't see. It is very emotional. I have definitely, you know, I think Stephen is exactly right that folks visiting the exhibit and the museum have had really emotional reactions and responses to this work. They've been very moved.
Anyone write anything to you? Email, or maybe there's comment cards. Maybe there's not.
Yeah, we do have a guest book in the gallery, and I'm not there now, so I can't read from it, but people are leaving comments, certainly. Stephen, have you heard anything from anyone? Has anyone written to you?
I've heard from a couple of people by email that they appreciated it. And we had the panel discussion a few weeks ago, and that they enjoyed the insights that we brought through that panel discussion. And then Shelley had mentioned during that discussion that the rise in anti-Semitism around the world is reflected now in an exhibit about what happens when we let that go. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was, you know, one of those weird coincidences when the exhibit we decide on ends up being relevant to the current situation.
So there's about six more weeks from the time that people hear this show, I should say, there's about six more weeks for the exhibit to be up in the Jefferson County Museum of Art and History, which most of us just call the museum, downtown Port Townsend on Water Street. What days and what hours, Tara, is the museum open?
Yeah, the museum is open Thursday through Sunday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay, and again, if somebody listens to this and they wonder what in the world did she just say, because they were busy about doing something in the kitchen, write to me at cats@kptz.org and I will help you out. So Stephen Yates, let's talk about you. I said we might, and we will. I went to your website because I was curious about you. I wanted to separate you from the person with whom you share a last name. Needed to unconfuse myself about that. On the closing page of your website, you write, and I'm quoting you, "making sense of creativity." I'd like to know, what do you mean about that? Making sense of creativity, maybe making nonsense of creativity? Explain those four words, what they mean to you in that context.
The creative impulse is one of those mysterious things that we don't really know how to cope with it in many ways. I grew up being an artsy child who, that was what always interested me, but I didn't understand the framework why I wanted to be creative. It's a sort of an ongoing mystery. So when I talk about art making sense of creativity. That's what I'm trying to do, is create work that somehow explains what the creative process and impulse is.
A word also, I'm kind of a wordsy guy, so here you go, that I found on your website that seems apparently to mean something to you, but I don't know what it means to you in the context of your art, and that is cipher.
Yes, a cipher for me is just a symbol that suggests something. So I quite often use abstract imagery, and a simple brushstroke like a Sumier brushstroke can have suggest a meaning but not have any specific meaning. So ciphers are just little clues to the mysteries, I think.
You said you, from childhood, have been an artistic individual. And I'm wondering, from your childhood to the present moment, where have you trained and how have you built upon what would be probably innate abilities?
Well, my father was a painter, even though his livelihood was made in other ways, but he had always been what I considered a serious landscape and seascape painter. And so I grew up with those images around me and the idea that it was a valuable thing to be involved in. So all through school, I was always interested in art. I went to school in Pocatello, Idaho, which is not known for its art community, but I found teachers and people who were supportive. Then I ended up, we moved to Boise, and I finished high school there and went to a couple of years of undergraduate work, and then transferred and finished my Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in painting at the University of Oregon down in Eugene. Then I went to University of Kansas in Lawrence and got my Master of Fine Arts degree. So after all the education, we ended up coming straight back to the Northwest. After being in Oregon, going to Kansas, we said, no, I think we want to be back in the Northwest.
And eventually Port Townsend. How did you find Port Townsend in 1980 when you came here? It was somewhat less of a place.
Right. Half of the downtown was vacant buildings. You know, you could walk down Water Street and really find vacancies everywhere. We came here to manage a little resort out on Marrowstone Island. And after doing that for a number of years, I found other work and moved into Port Townsend and have stayed here ever since.
I was going to ask you, what was your last day job? But you may have a day job even this day that I'm interviewing you.
No, retired, but I worked for the Postal Service, and so did my wife, Carol. So we both retired from USPS.
I believe, was your wife the postmaster?
No, she was the main window clerk.
That's why I recognize the name. Where can we see your work locally?
Right now, I'm not showing at any of the local galleries. I show work in my son's two restaurants, The Fountain and Nico's Grotto. So you can see the work there. And on my website, I'm showing up in Bellingham right now at Malloy Gallery. And eventually, I'm sure I'll show back around here in one of the galleries.
Well, Stephen Yates, thank you for what you did with Juxtapositions and what you're continuing to do. And well, I will not be there today, this being Friday, but I will certainly be seeing this exhibit next week, and I will leave a comment in the guest book for sure. I want to now talk back to Tara, because I want to talk about the holiday extravaganza. We're doing it again, Tara.
Yes, we're so excited.
On the 10th of December, right in your Museum of Art and History, it becomes a performance space, which actually nowadays is something that you're doing more regularly anyway. I think maybe the first concerts you had there until you realized you could do it without me were our extravaganzas, but I think you have a couple concerts, I'm diverting from what I was going to talk about, a couple concerts coming up in the coming few weeks, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Again, still with your help, Phil. So we definitely have leaned on you to help us book these spaces. But for first Saturdays, we have been having live music in the gallery during Art Walk, which has just been a lot of fun.
And I saw on your website who's coming up, but I cannot remember right now. So people can look on your website to figure that out, and they know how to handle their computers. I don't remember. This is like the fourth or fifth extravaganza. We had a bit of a break, like many of us did, because of the COVID pandemic. But we had an extravaganza last year, and it was wonderfully successful. And this one is going to be as well. Tara, you added something to our extravaganza, which, you know, I wouldn't associate a woman like you with trivia, but that is in fact what you brought to it. Are you going to do that again?
Absolutely. Yeah, I love trivia. And so, yeah, we've been working on some trivia questions. Just yesterday, I got some input from some local second graders. So we have some crowdsourced trivia this year from some of our local youth. Can't wait to see how people fare with those questions.
And what else does the museum staff have in store for people who will be coming to this event, which includes live music, of course, and interviews and Tara's trivia? But what else yep. is going on?
We'll also have some holiday crafting. So we'll do some card making. We might have some refreshments, you know, maybe some hot cider, something like that. Just general merriment to kind of really celebrate the holiday season.
Tara, it's not fair of me to say this magic word, but there has been in the past talk of cookies. Is there talk Ooh. Of cookies for the 2022 extravaganza?
There has not been thus far, but perhaps we should start that conversation.
No. And we're having this conversation at 2:40 in the afternoon on a Friday, and I didn't have lunch, so it's especially near and dear to me, even though maybe cookies should not be lunch. Well, we're having quite a bit of music, and this, in addition to interviews and trivia, the Charlemagne Trio. That's Charlemagne and Dirk Anderson, and I'm not sure the third person, so I can't tell you. PT Acapella is a group of people who normally perform in Rain Shadow, but they're going to be in a smaller group on our stage. They will be second. And then there's an unnamed Italian band featuring Lisa Flores, who is the daughter of Tony Flores, a very noted, fantastic mandolin player from Santa Cruz. Lisa Flores, Peter McCracken, and every time she writes to me, she wants to add somebody else to the band, so I think we're going to have a full stage with that group. Kristen Myers is a singer-songwriter, and she's from Port Townsend, and I find her especially delightful, nicely subtle, good communicator with her music. And wrapping it up will be Combo Choro, which is Port Townsend's premier Choro band, maybe the only one too, but at any rate, they are the premier Choro band, and among them is Al Bergstein, whom we know from KPTZ, Music to Drink Coffee To. So we have a full show. We'll break it up from time to time with conversation, and actually, I think there's a possibility that one of the regular Cats in Our Laps readers may be bringing some poetry, but we're not sure whether she'll come across the Strait of Juan de Fuca from Victoria that weekend. If she does, we will have her along as well. It's Catherine Stone, by the way. Anyway, that's going to be the 10th of December. The date approaches. You'll hear more on KPTZ 91.9. And with that, I think if I check my clock, I can see that it's a good time for me to say thank you to Stephen Yates, to Tara McCauley, and to all of you who listen. In the background, you're going to be hearing, if you're not already, April Kisses from the album Traversata with Beppe Gambetta, Carlo Anzo, and David Grisman from Port Townsend. Attention Please is aired on Monday at noon and at 5 on Saturday at noon and is posted as a podcast shortly after its first airing on Monday. Many thanks to you who listen to Attention Please and to KPTZ. I'm Phil Andrus.